Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, friends and foes, I guess. Are there any foes listening to this show, like rivals of Patrick, who hate listen to this podcast? I'm Patrick Beja, and I'm very glad to be welcoming you back to Pixels. In this podcast, we cover the news from the video games industry, and we don't do it week to week. We wait a few weeks, and we actually manage to analyze and understand everything that's been happening, or at least we try. We get away and get a better view for people who are interested in that, and for people who don't necessarily need a daily video game analysis podcast. Hopefully you get something out of it. I enjoy this little show very much. So especially, you know, on months like this, where it's a little bit crazy, and there is so much industry-shaking news that I don't even know where to begin. There's tons of stuff happening with Sony, who made unexpected purchases and announcements. There's a lot of stuff happening with Microsoft, and we can get into a little bit of speculation about what's going to be happening in the future there. And there's even a few rumors, interesting rumors about, well, Nintendo, the last of the big three, and a couple of others. Maybe, you know what, we're going to leave the biggest for last. We're going to leave the most industry-shaking news for last with Sony, actually. Xbox is not far behind this month, even though they have the it's something that we already knew, so it's a little bit less momentous. But let's cover very quickly a couple of portable console rumors. One concerning Nintendo and one concerning Qualcomm. The Nintendo one is one that has been floating around for a while. It is the development and soon-to-be release of a new version of the Nintendo Switch that would be an upgrade, essentially. Nintendo does that with their portable consoles all the time. They've done it many, many times, and it manages to keep their lineup fresh of hardware, I mean. And it also makes them a little bit of money, because people who have bought the previous version of the consoles often buy the new one as well. And I think the Switch is especially suited to something like that. It's the case for most handhelds, but I'm sure a lot of people can hand over the old Switch to, I don't know, the kids or the partner or something, and use the new one. And so the new one, as I said, has been rumored for a while, and we have a couple of, not confirmations, but very strong rumors that indicate that this, some of the things might, you know, happen as we suspected. The main one is that it would have DLSS technology for displaying 4K graphics when it's connected to a TV. So that means that it would have a newer CPU or GPU or APU that is designed by NVIDIA, of course. But it would mean it's newer, and so I doubt that this would be the only benefit it gets. It might be thinner transistors processor, and so it would be less power hungry. But more importantly, it might have things like ray tracing, which would improve the graphics on probably new games, but also old games. Older games might get upgraded. We know that Nintendo has apparently been asking developers to ready their games for 4K capability to begin with. So maybe higher resolution graphics, although I'm not sure. Higher resolution textures, although I'm not sure that that's how it works with DLSS, since DLSS essentially is an AI super clever, super powerful upscaler. But it would be interesting to see a Switch that would have more of the capability of competing, well, not competing quite with the PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series X, because it's not going to be as powerful, of course, but being able to have games ported over from those more powerful consoles in the same way that the current Switch can get obviously toned down versions of the PS4 and Xbox One ported to it, because the PS5 and Xbox Series are more powerful than the last gen consoles. And so it's not certain that the new consoles could, the games that are going to be made for those new consoles could be ported to the current Switch, because it's the power difference is so much bigger now that we have the next gen PlayStation and Xbox. That being said, it would be surprising if the games that are coming out for the new Switch, call it Switch Pro, or my bet is on Super Switch or Super Nintendo Switch or Nintendo Switch Super. We'll see. But if the games that come, the games that will come out on that console will be backwards and forward compatible with the current Switch. I mean, it's going to be the same, you know, console, and all the games are going to be running on both. So the benefits of having a more powerful console that you can port games that wouldn't be ported on the previous one might not be as strong as I would imagine in this scenario. So we'll see. But an interesting aspect of this is that it seems the reason Nintendo is being pushed to make that switch is that NVIDIA wants to shut down the line, the production lines on the very old Tegra X1 chips that the Switch is using. So NVIDIA is kind of pushing Nintendo, who really has very little incentive to change their lineup, because the Switch is still selling like hotcakes, even though it's, you know, CPU, GPU are extremely old at this point. So yeah, we'll see what happens. It seems like there would need to be an announcement sometime in the end of spring, maybe summer, and the release would be speculation at this point, but, you know, end of the year, early next year would make sense. So we'll see what happens. But another interesting piece of Switch-ish related-ish news-ish is a rumor that Qualcomm, which makes CPUs, and is considering or developing a Switch-like Android-based console. And that's really interesting, because we have seen a lot of attempts of turning phones into gaming machines, semi-dedicated gaming machines, and none of them has really caught on. And I think there are a lot of opportunities there for someone to make something in that vein. It's tricky, though, of course. That design that we are hearing about would include Joy-Con-like detachable controllers and a dedicated, customized Android OS, which would still have some of the standard Android features, a browser, the Google Play services, things like that. It could also have the Epic Game Store app at launch, you know, on it from the get-go. That's an interesting one, because it would mean that Epic could potentially get a foot in the door for getting games on a mobile device. It would be around $300, would have 5G, of course, because this is Qualcomm. And it would target early 2022. And so, again, this is interesting. Oh, and I didn't mention it, but, you know, Switch-like would also have a TV mode, so it would play games on the TV if you connect it to the TV. So it's really very much like a Switch. And the CPU, since the thing would be bigger and bulkier than a phone, it could have a more powerful, faster CPU. So that's interesting as well. But it really comes down to, I think, how Qualcomm is looking at this. If they're thinking we're going to make a phone gaming console hybrid, and that's going to be great because it's going to have the advantages of a phone and a gaming console, I don't think this can work out. This is a mistake that many tech companies and tech executives make, that they think the two are kind of so closely linked together that you can have the best of both worlds. And I don't think that works. What could work, however, is if they think of the device as primarily a gaming console with some smartphone functionalities on the side, maybe if you want to have them. If that is the case, if they think of it as a gaming console, I think there might be a space in the market for that kind of device. Mobile games are very successful, and there are a lot of them now. Some of them have, well, many of them can be controlled via controller, and it's looking like Apple might release a new Apple TV that is dedicated, or not dedicated, but that focuses more on gaming, kind of to take a stab at the gaming console market, and that would be a boon for gaming developers on mobile that want to make games that are more in line with traditional games played on PC or consoles, meaning the main difference is controlled with a controller. Of course, it wouldn't be exclusively controlled with a controller, but if it works, it could kind of create another market for mobile-ish games that is more similar to what the Switch is doing. I'm not saying it would work out, but I think it could carve a little space in the market, because the games exist. It's really a form factor, a hardware issue, and the games are there. And if this kind of catches on, and on its own, it might not catch on, but if Apple is pushing for something similar, and by similar, I mean an Apple TV that is connected to the TV and that is very much a console, then it could kind of, you know, jolt that market into a little bit of an existence. Again, you can sense that I'm not definitive in my statements. I don't think it's a given. But I think there is an opportunity there somewhere for someone if they do this very cleverly. So we'll see what happens there. So that was the Switch part of the conversation. We'll get to Sony and their purchase of Evo, which is crazy, and their pushing of PSVR, which is also crazy. But let's talk about Ubisoft. We'll talk about Ubisoft in that context, but let's talk about Microsoft. They have received approval for their purchase of ZeniMax, meaning Bethesda. And then ZeniMax is now part of Microsoft, of the Xbox team. That is really huge. I mean, we were talking about this a few months ago when they announced they were doing it. This is just a regulatory approval, and it has just been approved. So now it's happened. So everything we said back then is kind of has come true. We have doubled the number of studios on the Xbox team, the internal studios, which is crazy, especially given, of course, the fact that Microsoft is pushing the Game Pass service. And most of the ZeniMax games are on Game Pass now. And that's Bethesda, of course, which is a lot of games that you know and love. But not only, it's also id Software, Arkane, many others. And what has already been done and what is coming down the line. It is so big that I continue to, you know, it's everyone understands it now, but Game Pass is really redefining the market and forcing others to take notice and act on this. You might have seen that a lot of the PlayStation Plus games have become much more attractive since the Game Pass has been making the headlines. And Sony is even giving away games with their Play at Home service or offer if you have a PlayStation 5. I think it's even if you have a PlayStation 4, actually, for that one. So Play at Home is, I think, a reaction to Game Pass. It's not just out of the goodness of their heart that Sony is doing this. And there are a lot of things that are happening because of what Microsoft is doing. Something that's really interesting, I think, is looking forward, they're not going to stop. I think they are going to buy, I mean, they've said they're going to buy more studios. And I think their portfolio is almost complete now. But the main thing that's still missing is Japanese games. They are attractive to Western audiences, or at least they have Western-style games offerings up the wazoo in their internal studios, excuse the 1950s expression. But what they don't have is, in the Game Pass, something that appeals to gamers that are more into the Eastern style of games. And I think they could remedy this by making a smart purchase in very likely Japan, because that's where that history and affection lies. The problem is, of course, there aren't many studios that are easily purchasable in that context. There's, you know, Capcom was discussed for a while, and Capcom just exploded with Monster Hunter World. And it seems like those conversations, if they did indeed happen, are not in, you know, are not happening anymore. There are others. Konami has a gaming business that they don't seem to care about all that much anymore. They're still doing some things, but it seems not impossible that Microsoft would go to them and say, all right, we'll take your gaming IPs and business off your hands, and we'll do something with it, and here is a gigantic pile of money. It seems like Konami might do it, and even that is kind of a, you know, not a guarantee, not even far from a guarantee. It's not, it would still be surprising. The others seem impossible. Like Bandai Namco, it's very unlikely, and it would, the parent company, Kadokawa, I believe, would need to let it go, which I don't think it would want to. It's Square Enix, I'm not even going to discuss. That is too big for them. I mean, nothing is really too big. Microsoft is very, very rich, but it seems like it wouldn't happen. Although that would be all of them would be a coup. All of them would be coups. They have a lot of IPs that are very dear to gamers' hearts, and that would, all of them would be significant. Sega is another one that is on everyone's lips and minds. Sega Sammy is not doing a lot with their Japanese IPs, with their IPs, honestly. They have a Western arm that is doing very well. Actually, they have Atlus also, which is, you know, Persona, which is doing very well. And it would also be quite expensive, but it seems like the most attainable of all of them. And there are a lot of beloved IPs with Sega that Microsoft could take care of and redevelop in a I think more loving way than Sega has done in the past few years. They have been, I really think, poor stewards of their IPs. Same with Konami. They haven't really done a lot. Honestly, I think Konami, it would be the better, as a gamer, as an observer of that space, I would love for Microsoft to get Konami. That would be really incredible. You know, Castlevania, Contra, like there are dozens of IPs. Same with Sega, but Sega is so Sega that it would feel weird to see those IPs taken care of by someone else. Konami, I would be ready to see Microsoft do something proper with those old IPs. Of course, the new ones as well, Metal Gear Solid, Silent Hill. I say new ones, I mean 20-year-olds and not 30-year-olds, although Metal Gear was older as well, not Metal Gear Solid. Anyway, those are the big ones. I think people also mention things like From Software and Platinum Games, which are, one of them is private, another one is owned, and so it would be difficult to buy them. It would need to be a shrewd business negotiation, which is not impossible to happen, but From Software especially has a very bright future ahead of them. And not just the Dark Souls series, but they have a game they're working on with J.R. Martin. Who knows if that ever comes out. It would seem like in order to buy From Software from their owner, they would need to put in so much money that it's not worth it. And Platinum is working very closely with Nintendo, but Microsoft has worked with Platinum before, so it might be that the relations are there, and maybe the owners of Platinum, the private owners, they're not listed, wouldn't mind getting a gigantic load of cash and just call, you know, maybe stay at the company or maybe call it quits, whatever, we don't know. But so I think they're going to go to Japan next, and that's what everyone thinks, but I don't know who they would buy. I think they want to go to Japan, but any actual deal announced would surprise me. And just a quick word about Western studios that they could still buy. They're not going to buy a gigantic studio again. I don't think they would, you know, they would or could buy something like Ubisoft or EA or Take-Two or anything like that. I don't think they're interested in smaller studios. Smaller studios, they can get on Game Pass by forking over a little bit of cash and getting the day one inclusion in Game Pass relatively easily. And they don't need to buy the games to get to get what they want out of them. So I don't think that would happen. Even though we do have a lot of really cool studios in France, especially, but all over Europe and the US, of course. But I don't think they would be interested in mid-sized to independent studios. So I don't know. We'll see. So that's one part of the thing about Microsoft. It's not even the end, because we've heard that there might be discussions with Discord in order to, well, for Microsoft to buy Discord. Now, this is kind of a hybrid tech and gaming conversation, because Discord does, of course, it has its roots in gaming, but it's not only about gaming. It's very much about, well, about tech as well, and how it could integrate into Microsoft's ecosystem with Teams and everything else. And even more than that, Satya Nadella has explained their vision for creators in the future, and it's very much centered on communities. So it might be a business tech business move, like Microsoft is very much into the business side of things, and smaller business creators, everyone has a Discord community now. Any creator has a Discord community, and that happens, on Discord. Yeah, obviously on Discord. And I think that is a side of business that Microsoft is paying close attention to. So there's an aspect of that. But if we talk about the business, about the gaming aspect, it would be very interesting for Xbox to be able to do stuff with Discord. There's a marketing opportunity there. Maybe they can brand things that could be cool, because every gamer or a lot of gamers are on Discord, and seeing the Xbox logo all the time every time you launch it is, you know, mind space that is occupied and that is valuable. They could also have integration into Xbox Live, so that when you launch your Xbox, your friends from Discord are already there somehow. It's not easy. I think there's some complicated technical stuff there to resolve, but it could happen. And so the gaming communities that already exist on Discord could be seamlessly integrated into your Xbox One or Series, and you just, you know, keep chatting with your friends on your console. I think that would make sense. They could even resurrect the store that Discord had been developing and selling stuff on the Discord store instead of selling it, or maybe in parallel of selling it on the on their store, which is honestly not very well developed for games, and the Xbox app is not great, maybe that's a good way of integrating the Xbox Game Pass inside of Discord. Who knows? We'll see what happens and how much they want to integrate. But there is definitely something interesting there. And the price, $10 billion is what's being discussed, is kind of insane. It's more expensive than Bethesda cost. So yeah, it is crazy, and it speaks to the potential that Discord has for being really the place for communities, for creators, for everything that it is targeting right now. And it started targeting at the beginning of the pandemic. So that's a really interesting one. To finish off on Microsoft, there has been rumors of Microsoft integrating Ubisoft into the Game Pass. And of course, Ubisoft has a service called Ubisoft Plus, which is, you know, a subscription, so you get access to everything that Ubisoft does. It's kind of expensive. It's $15, but it includes all of the DLCs and everything, essentially. And you already get access to games on Stadia, the Ubisoft games on Stadia for quote-unquote free when you're subscribed to Ubisoft Plus. It's in beta in the US, I believe. But it's coming to maybe other types of devices and services in the future. Ubisoft likes to be everywhere, but including Ubisoft games into Game Pass would be a really interesting move. They've done this, of course, with EA Play, and that has increased the value of Game Pass significantly. Oh, by the way, talking about Discord, they could include Discord Nitro into Game Pass, which would be a nice plus. Nitro is like $5 a month, but it would, you know, it's not huge, but it's a nice little additional thing for gamers. But of course, EA Play there are two versions of EA Play. The one where you get back catalog games that have been out for like 6 months to a year to 2 years. And there's a premium version of EA Play that gives you access to everything that's come out, including day one. Of course, the version that is integrated into Game Pass is EA Play Basic. So you don't get the latest thing on Game Pass day one if you're just subscribed to the Game Pass. For Ubisoft, there isn't a basic version. There's only the version that gives access to everything. So it would be a little bit more difficult to implement. Ubisoft would need to develop a new offer that would only include, because I don't think they're going to include all of that into Game Pass. Like, it would be insane that you would get all of Ubisoft's game day one on Game Pass. I don't think that's likely to happen at all. They would need to have a back catalog version of Ubisoft Plus, which I jokingly refer to as Ubisoft Minus, where you only get older games, but it would still be a big deal. There are a lot of Ubisoft games, especially on the older consoles, and I'm sure that they would be made compatible with, you know, Xbox Series and maybe Xbox One. And so that would be a really interesting thing to see happening. Of course, it might be that they are working on this to replace EA Play once it cycles out of the Game Pass. I don't know how long that deal is, but I'm guessing EA Play is at least 2, 3, 4, 5 years. And we'll see what happens with Ubisoft, if it happens at all. But it's a little bit more complicated than EA Play. I don't think it's impossible. I think it might happen. And, you know, every time something happens, Game Pass becomes more and more unavoidable. Of course, some people are interested and maybe will never be. But every time they add something like this, if they add Japanese games, if they add Ubisoft games, if they add, there's another small segment of the population that thinks, you know what? Now, I'll get Game Pass just for this, and I'll get everything else on top of it. So I think they're not done, and they might go that route. We'll have to wait and see, though. And the last thing I want to cover today is, of course, Sony and PlayStation with the crazy things that are happening there. The main, most crazy one is Sony buying Evo. Now, for those who don't know, Evo is the Evolution Tournament, which is the main gaming tournament for fighting games in the world. It's been around for, like, in one form or another, more than over 20 years. And it is a gigantic community, and it's essentially where fighting game esports happens. That's where it happens. It's the not the only place, but the main place. And it's really big. It's a yearly open tournament, meaning everyone, anyone can participate. You go there, and there are thousands of participants. And the important thing, which I didn't even mention, but that is implied, is that it's not just a one-game tournament. It is all of the main fighting games. They select games each year, but it's all of the main fighting games of the moment. You know, Street Fighter, Tekken, Smash Brothers, although with Smash it's a little touch and go with Nintendo. They have a spotty relationship, as Nintendo likes to control everything about everything. But, you know, Killer Instinct, I'm not even going to mention more. All the main ones, you know, Guilty Gear and all of those. So this is the place for fighting games and for esports in that area. And as I said, it's an open, so you have a weekend where, well, extended weekend, where you have thousands and thousands of people. Anyone can enter, and you go through the, you know, the tournament, and at the end you have like five different grand finals for all of the games, five or six. So it is really kind of a crazy thing. And Sony has purchased EVO, along with RTS, which RTS is kind of a new venture created from partly Endeavor, which is a representation agency. And so RTS, I don't think really matters all that much, or it doesn't interest us. It's an investment type thing, which has some value, I'm sure, for them. But the main important thing, I would be very curious to know how much of that of EVO Sony owns and RTS owns. That would be super interested. I'm guessing Sony owns the majority, but we don't know. But Sony is the interesting part, of course. And a lot of people have been wondering why that happened. And it's a legitimate question. It's a little bit puzzling. We kind of thought maybe Sony would respond to Microsoft, who's been buying a lot of studios, by buying studios themselves, and certainly that might happen. But that kind of came out of left field. Buying a tournament is not something we're used to or that we expected. But thinking about it, I think it makes a lot of sense. Of course, esports is a big part of gaming these days. And you have a lot of, well, marketing opportunities, of course, but community building opportunities. And, you know, the events themselves are something that people enjoy. And if you want to get into esports as a part of your gaming world domination, you actually don't have a lot of choice, because most esports events are, you know, owned and organized by the company that owns the game that that tournament is centered around. They are very one game specific, all of the esports, you know, League of Legends, Dota, Overwatch is another big one, Call of Duty, and those are properties of the company that makes them. EVO has managed to create an event and build relationships and, you know, put something together that isn't centered around one game. And that is completely unique in not just fighting games, but in esports, period. It's the only big tournament I can think of that actually has any way of being purchased. It is a very clever move for Sony, or for anyone who wants to get into esports, because there's no other move. I think Microsoft saw that, and they were like, damn, we should have thought of that. I think it might have been the case, because they could have snapped up EVO in an instant, and that would have added a significant amount to their portfolio in a different way, right? Because it's not releasing games, but it's creating events. Now, imagine, I guess that's what's going to happen. We're going to see EVO promoted and easily viewable on PlayStation and, you know, PlayStation's channels, so it's going to give it a lot more visibility. It's going to create excitement for a lot of games that are primarily on the PlayStation, and we'll talk about that part of it in a second, but most of the fighting games come from Japan. Not all, but most of them come from Japan, and they are on PlayStation primarily, on PC as well, but on PlayStation primarily. So there's some synergy there. And Sony actually has weekly tournaments where they give out cash prizes on PlayStation, on the actual console. That's a little-known feature, but you can actually enter and compete in an online tournament on PlayStation and win some money. I have to confess, I've never done it. I've never seen it. I don't even know where you would go in the UI to do it, but I know it exists and it's happening all the time. So they're fostering that community and they are doing stuff there that could be beneficial to their core business. And you could completely imagine that Evo will now become a more important part of the yearly esports scene. You know, there could be maybe not monthly, but quarterly major tournament for Evo and stuff like that. So it would be, you know, they can grow it. They have the power to grow it. Maybe they can expand it to other. Maybe they can use the know-how and the expertise of the Evo team to replicate this for other types of events. Some people have joked that we will see PlayStation Battle All-Stars 2 come out, which I don't think is going to happen. That was a funny joke, though. And so I think there's a lot of opportunities there, and it makes a lot of sense. Now, there's a big question, of course, which is what happens to the games that are not PlayStation-centric? Because, of course, I mean, for Nintendo, as I said, they have a spotty relationship with Evo and anyone who's trying to organize stuff around their games to begin with. Nintendo doesn't play nice with others. So I wouldn't be surprised if they're thinking, you know what, Evo now, we couldn't do it online anyway. There's a whole thing for the last 2 years. Evo has been in a difficult situation, of course, like every, in-person event. But on top of that, they've had issues with horrible instances of harassment and, for all of its good, the fighting game community has problems, just like the gaming community as a whole, problems it needs to resolve. But going beyond that, I think Nintendo has not wanted to... They haven't really wanted to be at Evo anyway, and they couldn't do it because their community is you know, they wouldn't understand that Nintendo doesn't want to be at that big gaming, esports, fighting game fiesta. And the relationship between Nintendo and its Super Smash Brothers community is also a little bit spotty. Anyway, let's put that aside. For other companies, mainly, well, Microsoft, that's the one that's left, are they going to want to have their games played on a stage where everything says PlayStation? And their games, I mean mainly Killer Instinct, which... there's something there that is Microsoft going to want to withdraw from Evo as much as possible? There's a question there. They have said that they would keep PCs present and games. Maybe there are going to be games that aren't played on the PlayStation console. That's entirely possible. I still think there's going to be branding everywhere and, you know, play this game on PlayStation every ad break that you can imagine and stuff like that. So it's definitely, I don't think they're going to close the doors to anyone who wants to be a part of Evo as, you know, a gaming company, but there is going to be the little asterisks that says, hey, we're going to talk about PlayStation a lot, so better be prepared for that. So that's going to be an interesting one. As you know, I'm a big fighting game fan. And I'm really excited about all of this. There was a time, a long time ago, when the fighting game scene was the largest part of the gaming community. And I think fighting games are really, really cool. I think there's qualities to fighting games that you don't see in other esports areas. A fighting game has very little the way you approach a fighting game is your skill and nothing else, right? There isn't a team around you that will give you a great excuse for why you lost. There isn't an element of randomness that will make you, you know, pissed off if you don't get the card you want at the hand you want, at the draw you want. And fighting games are really two people sizing each other up and using their tools and their expertise and their skill to defeat one another. And that's all there is to it. And the purity of that, I think, is enticing for a sporting event. So I was saying there was a time when fighting games were the biggest part of competitive, quote-unquote, gaming. I would hope that this would, and now it's a little bit obscure. It's obviously not as big as, you know, battle royales or even, well, if we're talking about esports, MOBAs or even FPSs like CSGO and Overwatch and stuff like that. So I would hope that Sony brings it back to the forefront a little bit. Not to the entire forefront, maybe that's too much to ask, but makes it more visible and brings, more importantly, brings more people to those amazing experiences and games that fighting games are. So there's hope for that there. And the last thing I want to talk about is that crazy acceleration of that's happening with PlayStation VR 2 or PlayStation VR something. We don't know what they're going to call it. They announced a while ago that they were working maybe on something for PlayStation VR, a follow-up, but not this year, not next year. Not. It seemed like it was going to be, you know, in 5 years maybe. That's not the case anymore. They've announced the PlayStation VR 2 for PS5 officially. They haven't given a date, but a week later, they showcased the controllers for PlayStation VR 2. Again, that's not the actual name. They've showed the controllers, which was very surprising. I thought we were years and years away from anything concrete. And the release itself might still be years and years away, but it seems unlikely, as for PlayStation VR, the reason they show these things usually, that was what I speculated and it turned out to be. I actually, the news broke when I was doing a show. And so I speculated, well, if they're talking about it now, they must be sending out the dev kits. And it turned out that was exactly the reason. And if they're sending dev kits, it can't be 3 years away, I don't think. You start sending dev kits. Well, maybe for VR, you need to send them earlier because people need the actual hardware, at least the controllers, in order to design the games. It's difficult to build on spec when you have specific hardware like this, unlike consoles, traditional consoles. So maybe it's still, you know, a couple of years away. But it's not 5 years away. It would be surprising. And so that's exciting for VR on PlayStation, of course. And I think VR enthusiasts are excited about that. But beyond that, I think it's exciting for VR, period. And beyond the improvements on the headset, you know, there's going to be one cable. Maybe there's going to be a wireless module, I suspect. For PSVR, the controllers, yeah, I didn't even mention. The controllers are kind of nothing special, meaning they're kind of like Oculus controllers or Valve Index controllers. They can detect opened and closed hands and fingers, and they have that's a little bit new. They have the adaptive trigger that the PlayStation 5 controller has, so that's pretty cool, but it's not earth-shattering. Although for VR, if you want to hold something, you have the resistance that can be simulated a little bit. That's more haptic feedback than we've had in the past, which for VR can be more important than for traditional gaming. So that's, yeah, again, that's interesting. But beyond that, beyond the controllers, the fact that Sony is still very much into VR, and this is what this signals. They never retreated from VR. And by the way, some of the play-at-home games are VR games, and they're sort of giving away a lot of VR games, and they have been in recent weeks and months. So once the PSVR finally arrives, it's obviously going to be compatible with those games from PlayStation 4, I think. And so people will already have a sizable library of games, so buying the PSVR 2 will be an easier decision because you're like, well, I already have like 10 games that apparently are cool, so I want to give them a try, etc., etc. So that's a part of the equation. And the PlayStation VR being pushed now by Sony means that they are very much into VR still. Of course, their main device is still the PlayStation 5 itself, but PSVR is still a big part of their strategy, so they're all in on VR still. And that, a few months ago, we were kind of on the verge of, is VR really going to take, you know, pick it back up? Or is it going to go back to a dormant state for a few years? And between Facebook, which is still pushing the Oculus, and I'm sure they're going to have various devices coming out, Apple apparently working on AR/VR stuff coming in the next couple of years, and now PlayStation pushing it for gaming, it seems we're due for another bump in VR enthusiasm in, let's say, a couple of the next 2 years or so. That's my suspicion. So that is a really exciting thing. I don't think PSVR is coming out this year. I don't think it's maybe end of next year, you know, fall of 2022. But the CPU, the silicon shortages mean that you can't really put out a completely new product at this point, I don't think, especially since they're still trying to make enough PS5 consoles and bringing them and selling them. I think they're going to wait a little bit, maybe end of next year, we'll see. But it's not the main takeaway is that Sony is still behind VR, and so the entire ecosystem of VR is revitalized by that news, I think. So I think VR enthusiasts all around the world are celebrating and dancing around because, yes, VR is here, which means VR is not. I don't want to say dead. I never say dead when I talk about PSVR or VR in general, but dormant. And it definitely has become a little bit dormant in the past couple of years. So yeah, well, that's a lot of big news, honestly. That was a month with a meaty month, I would say. So yeah, I hope you enjoyed my discussion and my analysis of all of this. I am, for those who don't know, we're expecting our second child, completely switching topics, expecting my second child in about a week. And so I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, I know what's going to happen, but I don't know what's going to happen with work once that happens, because our experience with the first one was a little bit complicated. But we'll see how I can manage things, if I can come back for a show as soon as next month, or if I'll have to skip one. We'll see. But yeah, I enjoyed doing this show. Hopefully I'll be back soon. And if I'm not, please wish me luck for the renewed challenge of parenthood, which honestly is the biggest, gaming, there are rules, gaming challenge of them all. Thank you very much for listening. I'm Patrick Beja. You can find everything I do at notpatrick.com. I hope you have a lovely day and a lovely month, and I'll talk to you soon for more video game news and industry analysis. Talk to you then. Bye.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinez.
I'm Kayla Itzinez, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.